There's a lot of great contest action coming up, and I want to tell you about it here before we start the show. Of course, this weekend at Keeneland, it's the Grade 1 Gamble. There is still time to get involved. If you go to KeenelandSelect.com, if you reach out to Jim Goodman, you can play. Big contest Saturday, smaller contest there on Sunday. Also, for folks looking ahead, want to let you know about the big one that is happening at Hawthorne, and also that you can play on ExpressBet. There's an $800 bankroll contest happening on Illinois Derby Day. That's April 21st. $800 bankroll, no entry fee. Win, play, show, exact the daily double, $10,000 in prizes, BCBC, two NHC seats, and the $1 million bonus that goes along with. You can play on track or ExpressBet once again. Very exciting stuff. And then the Kentucky Derby Challenge, you can play on ExpressBet as well. This is expected to be a big tournament this year, and you can play online and compete for fantastic prizes. More details to come on that soon, but definitely know if you want to play a contest on Derby Day, you're going to probably want to play it with our friends over at ExpressBet, expressbet.com/tournaments. Welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Saturday. What is it? What day of the week is it? Saturday, April 13th. Peter Thomas, Fornital here, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker for a show. I haven't even decided all the pieces that are going to be on this show yet, or if we're going to do two separate shows, because we've got a lot of great content for you, and it's all going to start right after this. PTF back with you, joined as I was yesterday by a man who writes for us over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Up-and-coming, exciting contest player, qualified for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge for, I believe it was the first time last year, and very happy to have him back on these airwaves today. Michael Domable, what's up, buddy?
Pete, you're short shrifting me. I've been in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge the last 3 years. Come on, man.
How did I get that wrong? Hey, did you qualify for the first time last year, or have you qualified 3 years in a row?
I qualified 3 years in a row. The first year was through Horse Player Happy Hour, won a feeder and into the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Then won through Pick Your Prize, and then last year won the final table at Horse Player Happy Hour. So your initiatives are well endorsed by me. So
that's good. Yeah, I mean, because not only Horse Player Happy Hour, which will be starting again in June, people have started to come out of the woodwork asking about that. Going to be back in June. Going to have a little bit of a different format this year on that show. Might as well plug it while you're here, since you're our biggest supporter. We're going to do it a little bit more as a live racing show. It's going to be typically 90 minutes, 2 hours on a Thursday, and I think we're going to go with less pre-recorded stuff and more playing the races and really talking betting strategy and trying to take advantage of the fact that it is a live racing show. I'm looking forward to it. I think that's going to be fun. It'll also have the benefit of having most of the contest play out. I'm also hoping, and I haven't cleared this with our friends at the Breeders' Cup yet, so I could go back on this, but we may end up doing the final table with our contest jockey / World Horse Player Tour format, as opposed to the typical Horse Tourneys format, now that we have that. Anyway, I had a meeting with those folks, and I should have mentioned that. But anyway, not giving up on that idea. But here I say we're going to do this lean and mean, because we both have hard outs, and I do a three-minute tangent to start the show. But I apologize for giving you short shrift, and it's especially embarrassing given that you got the first one, and we talked about it on the airwaves at Horse Player Happy Hour. But there's a lot in the brain this time of year, as you can probably tell from the wide array of topics we have on this show today. So forgive me for being a little bit off my game. Host fail to start the show, but hopefully we'll get some host successes as we go on. Looking at this late pick five at Keeneland on Saturday, we start with stakes action. Phillies and mares in the Giants Causeway going 5.5. Michael, we'll let you kick this one off.
Yeah, I think this is it looks like a pretty competitive field. You've got 12 runners in the main body with an also eligible, but I really think it boils down to just three horses who can win. And I have the longest price of those three on the morning line as my top pick, and that's the number 12, Love Reigns. One of the absolutely most potent angles at Keeneland over the past 5 or so years. has been Wesley Ward off of layoffs and turf sprints. And what you would initially think that that's you're not going to get too great a value on that, but there are plenty of horses that show up that are that kind of look like Love Reigns, where they're middling prices on the morning line, and they go off around, you know, 4-1 to 9-2. You can just look at this filly from last year, did this exact thing, came off a layoff and won a turf sprint stakes race for Wesley Ward. And if that's not enough evidence, Wesley had Fandom win the Palisades at a healthy 7-1 or so earlier this meet. And speaking of Fandom, that's actually who Love Reigns has been working with for her comeback, and to my eye looked to be working better, as good if not better, than that colt who just came back and won off the layoff. So she's definitely my top pick, versatile running style. The other two I would use would be the number 8 Roses for Deborah. I've been a fan of hers for a lot of last year. She took she was a relatively short price in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, which is a feather in her cap to be, as a filly, to be that low, or a mare now, to be that low of a price. And then the number 2 Bling, I think, would be more of a backup for me, but she's a turf sprinter, and there's some form around her where she wasn't getting to do what she does best. Now, I'm a little concerned with the Oliver Barn being not as great off the layoff, but she's one that I would want to have at least some of my playthrough, but most of it goes through the 8 and the 12.
I'd be interested, have you filtered Oliver Barn off the layoff just at Keeneland? I wonder if there might be a difference in those stats. I haven't done that work, but I've, knowing you, you might have.
I haven't done it specifically. I do know that she won with most stash on opening day, which was off the layoff in a turf sprint.
Yep.
Generally, I still think that it would be negative, but I haven't looked it up specifically for her at Keeneland.
Obviously a meet that she targets, and I have no problem with playing. I came up with the same horse as you in Love Reigns, who, you know, I just love that race. I guess it was this race last year, scything through the field and getting up, and then unfortunately had a setback and didn't end up making Ascot. I'm assuming the plan, if all goes well here, would be for her to make the journey over there. The goofy one I have, and you can call me being a Timeform US fanboy on this one, but just that idea of trying to pick the speed of the speed. BG Warrior, the 5 runner, completely clear on the pace map, and this is a horse that has been plying the trade on the synthetic. That Franklin run sort of popped and stopped in the Franklin in the fall. You know, had the Kentucky Downs turf sprinting win going to 6.5 there. I thought it was worth throwing in. It was what was sure to be a big price. I was going to mainly center around 12 and 5. Can you see BG Warrior at all in this spot?
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has what looks to be a pace advantage. The one concern I have is just she's been pulling that trip over like 6.5 at on the synthetic, and I just feel like there's a little bit more speed in these races, even if it doesn't show necessarily on the Timeform US pace projector. She's getting a little bit more pressure, I think, than she did in those synthetic races. And it's going to be tough to hold off some of these pretty stout closers.
Not going to be easy, but speed of the speed on the turf at a price is something that I'm always going to have, at least as a backup. Love Reigns, the main play for me there. Let's move on to race number 8, an allowance going 1/16 on the dirt, which does, I agree with Timeform, look to have a ton of pace signed on in this one. That should set it up for the number 7 Classic Catch if he's anything near ready, and that workout 2 back at Palm Beach Downs perhaps signals that he is. I was going to be a little bit boring here and go with the chalk number 7 Classic Catch. Did you have anything a bit more creative for us in race number 8?
Yeah, for me, this race would almost be the reason why I would play the all-turf pick 3 over the pick 5, just because this is a race where I struggled with it a lot because there's a lot of question marks in the race. The first question mark for me is what's going to happen with the entry. You've got Giant Game and Howling Time both listed to run here. They're named with the same jockey, but I don't know if that completely precludes them from switching the jockey at the last minute and running both. Now, they were both entered MTO for a race on Thursday and both scratched. So lot of moving parts here. Nothing definitive from me on who's going to run and who's not. But that does that decision does affect the pace. And so I feel like if one or both of them scratch, then Transect, the number two, would be a lot more likely. So it's kind of a play it by ear situation on the pace scenario for me. There's really no runner I would be able to completely throw out. I do agree with you that Classic Catch is the most likely winner. Has been working well for his return. Actually working with Tappet Trice, who was my Travers pick last year. So it'll be good to see him get back to the races as well. But I think it's kind of dependent on what the pace situation is after the scratches, if there are any. Whether it would be Transect or Classic Catch is my main play. And then the others would all be backups. Honestly, I can't throw anybody out.
That makes sense. I'll put that in the notes. I'll write that you don't have a strong opinion. 2-7 would sort of be the A line, and then B line basically all the rest. People can discern from that. I'm sure that you have no real opinion. Just as a reminder, if you're new around here, and we have a lot of new people who've come via the YouTube channel, if you're interested in getting little digests of all the picks that we do on these shows, sign up for In the Money Plus. You get extra podcasts and written content as well as things like our Kentucky Derby package. Check that out, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. We continue with grade one action in the form of the Jenny Wiley. Phillies and Mares 4-0 going a mile and a 16th on the turf. Which Chad Brown runner do you like, Michael?
Well, yeah, as unenthused as I was about the previous race, this one is just maybe the most exciting race of the weekend. You've got so many runners coming from so many different angles, even with four Chad Brown runners in the race. I kind of prefer, out of Chad's four, I prefer the number seven, Surge Capacity. I was really taken with her wins last year. Especially the one in the Matriarch where she had some traffic trouble coming to the lane and found the narrowest of gaps down on the rail and burst through with a pretty potent turn of foot to get up and win. Gina Romantica is probably the one that of Chad's that I would be willing to play against. I was disappointed with her in the Beverly D at my home track of Colonial Downs last year. I thought she should have done better to be a little bit closer to Feb Rover. And then her two wins that kind of make her a contender here both came with her win in the her win in the First Lady, and then her good race in the Breeders' Cup Mile both came with really good trips. So I think she's a little bit dressed up off of that. The other A I would use with Surge Capacity is the number nine, Didia. Maybe it's a little bit of my heart over my head on this one with her having run so much at Colonial Downs in the past, starting her domestic campaign at the New Kent, Virginia locale. But she's so consistent and she can make her own trip. I liked her win in the Pegasus Filly and Mare turf race where she was able to show a new dimension of getting more forward. So I think she just shows up every time, a very admirable sort. And then I would throw in the other Chad as a backup, the number 10, Beau Cachet. Just because I think sometimes when Chad has this many horses in the race, he kind of orchestrates their running styles. And this is the one where I think that could get forward and could have a first run on some of the other ones. And if the pace is really back down, maybe she can spring the upset as well.
Frankie Dettori will probably be the perfect guy to give her that aggressive ride. I was going to be contrarian and go with Didia as well. I just think she's underrated still. I mean, these are a couple of really fast races. She might be six, but she's in career form. She can make a trip, you know. She can close, she can stalk, she can basically front run, as she showed last time. I'm a huge fan. I'm not quite a Jessica Paquette level fanboy of Didia, but I'm close. And I was going to try to get her on some tickets, and I was going to mess around with English Rose, thinking that even though Appleby typically gets so bet in these spots, that with the four Chad Browns, there's going to be so much money going that way that maybe to bet the don't pass line, as it were, no offense to Chad or his horses in here, but that just strictly from a gambling point of view, it might be an interesting way to fly. English Rose might be a cut below, but I don't know. This is decent form from over there at Maidon and could stack up well. It's a little bit hard to know, but I think the 9-2 price guess from Nick is pretty good, and I'll give it a little bit of a whirl in case that one's ready to fire. 9-5 for me in a very contrarian approach to the Jenny Wiley, a race I'll admit I'm probably more interested in watching overall than betting a ton of money on, but definitely a very cool race. Did you do much digging on English Rose? Do you like her at all?
She's got a ton of upside, and I would have her as a backup. I didn't mention her just out of the sake of having three or four other ones that I mentioned. But I think that just the Appleby factor, it's kind of gone overboard at this point. I mean, he had a runner who on paper I couldn't have seen under 10-1 who went off near favoritism in one of the stakes races, the 3-year-old turf stakes races, mm-hmm. On opening day or the day after. That's the only factor. If she is around that 9-2, 5-1, 6-1 price, then there's something there. But I worry about the Appleby factor a little bit, even with all the Chads in the race.
We'll see how it plays out. I mean, obviously we do these shows days in advance, and you need to be reactive in a race like this, especially. I mean, sometimes I go in and I pretty much know my pick is going to be my pick. Other times it's a play the board race. This is a play the board race. You know, if Beaucoucher is like some crazy price, I think I would work that one in, but it's not a horse that I want to pick. All right, we need to move forward, and we'll do so with the last Triple Crown Kentucky Derby points race of the season, the Lexington Stakes. JK and I have a video up about this one on the channel that folks can check out. I made a little bit of a case for the 9 Liberal Arts in this spot, who I thought had an opportunity to potentially bounce back in this third start of the 3-year-old year with a patient, very good under the radar conditioner and a racing style that I thought might just be run to suit in here. I was thinking this pace could be a little bit faster than the time form algorithm suggested. That was the main one I was interested in. I respect the Wine Steward tremendously, and I feel like I need to at least talk about him for a second, but I am worried coming off this layoff playing catch up that you know, you're going to just see a little bit better from him down the line. Not sure what we're going to see today. I was willing to fade some of the others that are going to take money and basically row in with Liberal Arts in the Lexington. How do you see it?
Yeah, I agree with you that of the shorter prices, Liberal Arts is the one that I want. I'm kind of out on Hades at this point. The number 8 Encino seems like more of a turf/synthetic horse, although Brad Cox is always dangerous. And I thought the 9 Liberal Arts didn't have the best of trips in the Arkansas Derby. So it was a little dirtied up off that. I actually am going to make the number 1 Secret Chat my top pick, out of value, from a value standpoint. And I'm kind of out on Hades. The Wine Steward's got to show it to me coming off the layoff. I don't want any short price on him. My case on Secret Chat isn't too detailed. It's more about, why is this Florida bred running in the Grade 3 Lexington? It's not like they can make some last ditch effort to get to the Kentucky Derby. It's only I think the winner can only get 20 or so points, which isn't going to make the cut. And this ownership group is one that I always want to keep my eye on in terms of like horses that sometimes pop up with big performances out of nowhere. It's the ownership group that had Sharp Azteca and XY Jet. So there's something to it. I have a sneaking feeling that this colt could be here for a reason. I also believe that the stretch out and distance is going to do him some favors, being by Union Rags out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare. Well drawn on the inside for a race that has the short stretch finish line. So I'm going to read the tea leaves a little bit and go with the number 1 Secret Chat.
I think it's a good spot to take a shot, honestly. I mean, I didn't come up with that on my own, but as you say it, it makes sense. And boy, you just don't need that much reason in a race where you don't trust some of the favorites to go with a horse that is going to be certainly the double digit odds. Nick has it 15-1. And I think, don't you think there's a good chance he'll be all of that?
I would hope so. And I'd almost want to see him take a little bit of money. Just to, sure. You know, if the the reason behind my pick is right, then I think there'll be some money behind him, and he'll maybe be in that 10-15-1 range, which is kind of the sweet spot for me to get involved. I mean, the Lexington is kind of a race. I don't know off the top of my head. I know there's been plenty of major upsets, and it seems like you have these horses that are trying to make the last ditch effort for the Kentucky Derby, and they maybe get pushed a little too hard to get there, and then that can produce some wacky results.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Let's move on to the nightcap. We've got about 3 minutes to finish this one up. Nice looking 3-year-old allowance race going a mile and a 16th. When it comes to this late pick five at Keeneland on Saturday, Michael, we'll ask you the key question. How are we going to get paid?
I'm on the number 5, Royal Majesty here. Regally bred, being By Frankel out of Crown Queen, who I believe is either a half or a full sister to Royal Delta. And I liked her win in at Gulfstream in the maiden. First in North America. When they win, I always take notice. And then was just given absolutely no chance in the stakes race at Gulfstream on what I believe was the Fountain of Youth undercard. Just a dawdling pace, and so had no chance to produce a kick. I think you'll get the exact opposite situation in the allowance to close out the Keeneland card on Saturday. And I'm looking for a big effort and honestly a big year from Royal Majesty moving forward. Maybe some of those turf stakes races at Saratoga might be on his dancing card. The other one that I would throw in on a beeline, the number 6 Gorilla Trek, Phil Bauer and Rigney Racing. They'll pop up with prices, you know, normally in that 8-10-1 range. So I'll have him on a backup ticket just because he's got a lot of dirtied up form, having run on dirt and synthetic, a lot of off the turf races, and was only 11-1 in the Bourbon last year. And now you could get the same price on that colt in an allowance N1X.
I can see it if I squint. I'm with you on Royal Majesty. I think this horse is one that I'm very, very happy to make a play with. Feels like you got that maiden win, tricky trip against the flow, probably poised to explode and move forward, and has shown a ton of talent and a lot of late kick in a race that has plenty of pace signed on. One long shot I'll mention before we get out the door here, and I could be out to lunch on this one, but I'm a little intrigued by the 2 Copper Missile in this spot. I love the draw. This is a horse that also has some closing kick. Those recent Palm Meadows works look notably fast. You know, I'm not sure what that means. I might be reading too much into it, but 20-1 on the morning line for a horse that should get the right kind of, potentially right kind of inside out closing trip in this spot. Why not? Especially for underneath in your vertical. So we each like Royal Majesty. We have different 20-1 morning line horses to get in there. Any closing thoughts on this race or anything else on this Keeneland card before we call this segment a wrap, my friend?
No, just an exciting Saturday of racing. Be sure to head over to InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Check out my analysis on the Turf Pick 3 and enjoy the racing, everybody.
Loads of free stuff over there that has been killing it. I mean, just terrific analysis. No annoying pop-ups. I mean, I tell you, I go to other websites in this industry and I wonder sometimes. I try to think, as a guy who runs a business, what it must be like to, if they ever look at the spreadsheet line, that like, this is the money we make by endlessly annoying our customers. Hopefully we'll never have to do that. One other reason to support In the Money Plus, honestly, is to keep us from having to do that. But great, the most important thing is the analysis is terrific. And Michael, you've been a big part of it for quite some time now. Really appreciate you, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Pete.
The show will continue after these messages from our sponsor. Today's show also brought to you by our friends at Free Reign Coffee, freereigncoffeecompany.com. If you've been watching our YouTube videos, you've seen me drinking the stuff and you can see how much I like it. Whether you're looking for grounds or beans or pods or just cool merchandise, Free Reign Coffee Company have got you covered. They come in a variety of different flavors, and so far I haven't found one that I don't like. Best of all, 20% discount right now, site-wide, if you use our promo code ITM20, freereigncoffeecompany.com, and that promo code is ITM20. Very excited to welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast airwaves a voice you've heard elsewhere on the network on numerous occasions, making his debut in this corner of the world from OBS sales ahead of the big sale next week. This is Todd Wojciechowski. Todd, how are things?
Oh, things are great. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, man. A little bit of a change in plan today. We ended up moving what were supposed to be workouts to tomorrow. Is that just a weather-related phenomenon?
Yeah, we had a severe weather alert for today here in Ocala, the Ocala area. Honestly, I think it ended up being a little kinder than what was anticipated or forecasted. However, it would have still been extremely difficult to have an under-tack show. The winds were still gusting extremely hard. I actually had my outrider tell me that there was someone on the track galloping because we did open the track for training this morning, and the wind blew their helmet cover off their helmet. So
my goodness,
it was pretty significant winds. There was a little bit of rain. We had not a ton of rain. About noon, we had a big storm, but anyway, rather safe than sorry, and we'll be ready to go tomorrow.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you want as many eyeballs on there as possible, and you don't want any excuses for potential buyers to stay home. I absolutely get that. And then you throw in the safety concern, becomes kind of a no-brainer. So you're talking to a little bit of a different audience on my show, Woj, than you do on some of the other corners of the network. So this is a more general audience, you know, there's industry people, but there's also a lot of horse players in there. So it's an opportunity to maybe back up and take a very high level view of the role that you and OBS play in the entire sales landscape, if you want to give me that overview.
Sure. So, you know, basically right now what we're going through is our two-year-olds in training sales. And the analogy I always use is it's like the NFL scouting combine. So the horses are here on the grounds. They do an under-tack performance. Most of them are timed breezes. They don't have to be, but they are. And it's just another metric for buyers to use in their selection process. As far as you can imagine, you know, just like the coaches are looking at players and wanting to see their 40 times, the buyers are looking at the horses and wanting to see their eighths or quarter times. So, like I said, it's another metric for a buyer to use in purchasing a racehorse. Unlike the yearling sale where you only get to see them on the shank at the barn, here you get to see them on the racetrack and then also at the barn on the shank.
A lot of benefits to the two-year-old sales, including, you know, I know a lot of people in ownership partnership side, they get very excited at the possibility to get action that quicker. And of course, just in the way you described, you're dealing with something, not a finished product, but something a lot more of a finished product than a yearling where there's a lot of guesswork involved. Is that a desire to be able to maybe buy a horse who races the same year a huge driving interest for a lot of your buyers, would you say?
Oh, I think that's very fair. Absolutely. You know, not that the yearlings, you know, that yearlings that someone purchases can't race as two-year-olds, but at least you're getting a view prior to purchasing a little closer to the races. Like I said, just it's more information for that buyer. You know, on top of that, one of the things that I think gets lost in the whole process, and we're always talking about the horses, and rightly so, that's what we should be talking about. But one thing that gets overlooked a little bit is the amount of expertise training that comes along with these horses that's occurring by these consigners. You know, most of these guys that are selling two-year-olds are also getting ready many horses for other clients that bought yearlings and are getting them ready for the races. So not only are you just buying a racehorse when you come to the two-year-old sale, but you're also getting that level of expertise of training already built into the horse.
That's a good point and definitely a reason for the appeal. One angle as a horse player I've used with this sale over the years is even if you don't know anything about the breeding side of the business, if you're handicapping a race at Saratoga and you see a horse that's sold at OBS April for a big multiple of the sire's stud fee, very often to me, that's a proxy for the fact that they worked well or looked great at that sale. And there might be something a little special under the hood. And that's an angle that's paid dividends. And sometimes it's one the market picks up on. Sometimes you can catch live horses at prices even that have that angle. Is that sound logic to you? I don't know how much you get involved in the on the wagering side of things, but does that sound like a smart way to fly to you?
Well, I'm certainly not going to count myself as an expert handicapper, but I do believe you're on to something. And again, as we all, we're always looking for data and we're always looking for decision points. And I think that that is an excellent use of the information. You know, you can go to our website and see all of our past sales. So you could actually watch the video of that horse breezing and see for yourself how that horse moves, if you even care, you know, if you care to. And you'll see the time and you can compare it to other horses that breeze the same time or brought in the same ballpark and as far as price. So I think, yeah, I think that's a great use of that information.
Terrific tool, obssales.com. I know there's some people who specialize in two-year-olds who spend an awful lot of time on that website and have opinions that people in the industry respect almost as much as bloodstock agents when it comes to that stuff. Thinking of one of our semi-regular guests, Jack Jenkins in particular, has come up with all kinds of great stuff looking at your obssales.com website. I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's get down to the specifics of the sale next week, April 16th to 19th. In terms of giving an overview, obviously, you know, you're excited about everything you're selling. That's why they're in the sale. But what are you thinking in terms of the general mood as we get into next week? Any particular highlights or things that you're looking forward to?
Well, you know, it is an opportunity to get it's kind of probably the first time that we get a large sampling, because we'll sell 1,200 horses or catalog. We've cataloged over 1,200, 1,208 to be exact, for this sale. So you get a kind of a larger sampling of some of the freshman sires, and seeing what those horses look like on the racetrack, I think that's very helpful. That could be another tool for you as you incorporate that into your handicapping, particularly on freshman sires. But we're an optimistic bunch, right? We're in a glass half full industry. So we're always looking next. We're always looking for the next big horse. And, the next week is the best opportunity somebody's going to have to get their next big horse.
For people looking for all the details, obssales.com, that's the place to go and check that out. You mentioned about freshman sires. Are there any in particular who you're noticing the buzz around, or anything you've noticed in terms of the physicality of some of these horses that has you thinking, this could be the next big thing?
Well, we still have 3 days of Under Tack Show left, but I've been impressed with the Vekomas. I've thought that they've looked good on the track. That's one that's kind of stuck in my head. I don't mean to single out one horse, but
no,
it's just one that comes to mind off the top of my head.
No, I love it. And how much do you follow the breeding industry as a whole? I mean, you must be very plugged in to what's happening on at the other sales and just taking a holistic approach, even though obviously you have your specialty down there.
Yeah, absolutely. We do. Cause and quite frankly, we'll go to the number of the yearling sales and we'll lay eyes on a lot of horses, either, and not just the weanling yearling sales, the weanling sales, the yearling sales. And the more times we get an opportunity, there's a number of those horses that sell as weanlings and yearlings that we'll see in the two-year-old market. And the more times we get eyes on them, the better off we are in helping consigners make decisions about horses.
That's great. It's great to be able to participate on that level for people within the industry. And you have tools and the ability to help potential new buyers who are coming in. What's the best way for somebody who wants to sort of learn more about how it works, who might be interested in buying a horse coming in from the outside without industry connections? Is that something that people could reach out to your sales company for?
Sure. I think one of the best things, if somebody's being patient and they want to do their due diligence, just come to the sale and watch. Come to the sale and take it all in and see what the process is like. See, you can come. You're welcome to come to our Under Tack shows. You're welcome to come to the sale. I think getting in and getting an understanding of the process will be helpful. You'll probably meet some people along the way. I do think that when you first launch in to trying to buy one, you probably should ask for some help. Find somebody you trust. Find somebody that has a track record, and rely on their ability.
Excellent. Well, that's great advice, and I need to get down to one of these sales. But just that idea for somebody interested in getting into the game is using the sales for a networking event makes all the sense in the world. And it's something I think, you know, if you are coming at it from a horse player side, I'm going to venture to say you can't help but learn something going around and hearing people talk and hearing the chatter about the different sires and how they're doing and physicality, well, and what people look,
yeah,
for.
And you know, to kind of put it in the handicapper's phrase, you know, you'll be in the back walking ring and you'll be sight handicapping horses right there. Right. Yep. You're looking at horses, you know, making your, you know, decisions. That's a great training tool, I think. And will help you understand the process of the sale itself.
Woj, really appreciate you coming on during such a busy week. Godspeed next weekend. Folks who are interested in learning more, check out obssales.com. Woj, we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
The 149th running of the Preakness Stakes will take place on Saturday, May 18th, as part of an incredible weekend of racing that's going to feature the finest three-year-olds in thoroughbred horse racing, the second jewel of the coveted Triple Crown. Preakness returns as Baltimore's finest entertainment and curated hospitality experience, from indoor dining in the grandstand to premium outdoor viewing from the first turn suites and the iconic turf-signed terrace. Guests will enjoy everything the Preakness has to offer. For more information on attending Preakness 149, check out www.preakness.com. Next up on the show, because no good deed goes unpunished, we bring back a guest who was on last week as well, coming to us from somewhere different, from an undisclosed location in Buenos Aires, I believe, Argentina. She comes to us to talk about the JRA action Saturday night into Sunday morning. She's Alex Henry. Alex, what's up? What brings you to Argentina?
Hey, Pete. I'm in Argentina for a nephrology conference with some team members of mine. So yeah, World Congress of Nephrology doesn't stop JRA racing.
And it always throws me off that time-wise, you're actually ahead of where I am, right? You're an hour ahead of me right now?
Exactly. 1 hour ahead. So it's lunchtime here.
South America is a big place, is the lesson. But I guess we knew that. Let's dive into some racing action from last weekend before we look forward. You know, we talked about the fillies, and what was your impression of how things went down on the racetrack? Did you and the team have any luck?
Did have luck. Actually was able to connect for that late pick five. So very grateful for that. It really, even for 20 cents, it paid about $1,200. So I'm very happy with that. So it's definitely very playable, and you can spread where you're not sure and feel pretty confident with the betting public and singling heavy public favorites as well. So that's kind of the way I went last week. But what a great race. We talked about the top two, Ascoli Pacheno and Stellenbosch being the top two fillies to look for. And they really put on a show for us. Stellenbosch just getting the better of her rival late. So I can't wait for the rest of the classic races. It's going to be those two to the wire, I think.
We'll remind folks that you can get full coverage over at inthemoneypodcast.com from Alex and the rest of the team. And yeah, that was a nice winner for sure. And if you want to go check out the replay of the race, YouTube is as good a place as any. What are your main sources for JRA racing information through the week? I know obviously we post the PPs late in the week, but what do you look at every day?
Yeah, great question. So two amazing English sources come in the form of Netkeiba's English site. That's Netkeiba. I believe it's en.netkeiba.com. So that's a great English resource with plenty of news. The horse profiles are in English. Horse trackers are in English. So that's a great resource. And then also my personal favorite is Umanity, and that's Umanity, umanity.jp/en. And that is another amazing resource. That's probably my primary resource for deep diving information and horse profiles, to be quite honest. But those two resources give you past performances, race charts, their own proprietary speed figures, and great news. So
that's very cool. How have you done any work on looking with like the Breeders' Cup horses or anything to come up with any kind of scale for how the figures on a site like Humanity might translate to the USA or to the or to UK form figures or anything like that? Have you done any work on translating those?
That's a great question, actually. I haven't really done too much work, to be honest, but that's a great project for this year, a great longitudinal project I'd be happy to take on. It seems like the unhumanity.com, it seems like their U index, which is their proprietary speed ratings, kind of translate to like the racing the ones that Racing Post uses, like the Racing Post form ratings. But I'll tell you, for the Satsuki show this weekend, there are all these colts and one filly are very close. So it's going to be tough to sort them out. But I think that's what they most closely resemble, those Racing Post figures.
Pretty interesting. Well, that's maybe a project we can work on together offline, production meeting outside the show. But you've tipped our hand. We're talking the Satsuki show tonight. First leg of the Triple Crown. We'll start with a bigger question for you. Do you think there's a horse this year who might be capable of taking down all three races, or do you think it's going to be more competitive than that?
I think it's going to be more competitive than that, and that's especially because, you know, Connections have decided to send a filly and Regaleria to this race, and she's a heavy favorite. So unless we have the elusive filly Triple Crown winner in all male races, male-directed races, I'm not quite sure if there's a breakout star for the males this year, but in saying that, still a great betting race, and there's still a lot of talent and a lot of horses upside here I want to see run.
What is their stated reason for wanting to try the filly against the boys in this spot?
I think it's a distance, question of distance, so, and talent as well. So they knew she wanted more distance, so they elected, instead of the Hanshin fillies, the grade one Hanshin fillies stakes last year, run over 1600 meters. They elected to run her in the grade one hopeful stakes, again, traditionally geared towards males. It's a young race. It hasn't been run, for less than 2 decades. I know that for sure. And that's over 2000 meters. So about a mile and a quarter. She relished that distance. She was ridden by Christophe Lemaire that day, and he was just surprised and quoted saying he was surprised how quickly she quickened, noting that there's still plenty of room for growth. And over the winter, if she grows up the way he thinks she will, she's going to be a great horse. And he used the word great. So
he would
super
know.
Excited for her. Oh, yeah. And he would know. He would know, of course. And unfortunately, you know, he's still recovering. He won't be in the irons this weekend, but she'll get Hiroshi Kitamura in the saddle, who is a regular jockey for Scully Pacheco. You know, second, of course, as we just discussed, second place runner-up in the Oka show last weekend. And that's, you know, still an amazing jockey, an amazing rider. So I think if she doesn't win tomorrow, it's not going to be the rider. It'll be Tripp or someone with a ton of upside breaks through and gets the better of her.
Who might that someone be? We should point out that this also is the 2,000 meters, the mile and a quarter. Justin Milano, one taking a lot of early attention. That's another cool thing. You get a little bit of a market glimpse looking at humanity.jp. Just make sure also you toggle to the English. You might be a little confused if you're an English speaker and you don't do that. But I did notice some money there. But who do you think has the most upside of the competition?
Honestly, I think the horse that has the most upside could be Justin Emperor. And he's being bet like he's the next coming of a good thing. He's only raced twice. Broke his maiden last November over 2,000 meters. So, you know, Connections knew that he wanted a route of ground over classic distance. And then he upset Jantar Mantar last out. In a grade three, the Kyoto Tushin High, over 1800 meters as the fourth choice. Jantar Mantar being the winner of the Asahi High Futurity Stakes, grade one, and the champion two-year-old colt from last year in Japan. So definitely good field, faced grade one winner. And the public really thinks he is going to be the next big thing. He's sitting right off of Regaleria at about 5.6 decimal odds, and she's at 2.5. And so it's really these two heavy favorites in the betting.
And in terms of making a selection, are you going to go with one of those two or try to pull in something at a bit more of a price?
You know, we have to have a price, Pete. We have to look for a price. And I really, so speaking of Jantar Mantar, this conversation is just flowing beautifully into each other. So just a little bit of backstory on this colt. So he's a Palace Malice out of a Wilburn mare. Again, winner of that grade one, the marquee race for two-year-old males in Japan over turf, two-year-old male champion. He's really not getting that much love in the betting, the betting public. He's sitting at 12.4 decimal odds, which is a fifth choice, which is wild to me, and only off of one loss after being previously unbeaten as a two-year-old. He was second, not even by a full length, to Justin Milano after running well. And here, get this, Pete. So the top two, Justin Milano and Jantar Mantar, in that last grade three prep for this race, they both ran their last three furlongs in 32.6 seconds. That's wicked fast.
Jeez,
that's faster. It's crazy fast. So they equaled each other. So it's not, I really think it was a case of Justin Milano getting a jump on Jantar Mantar. He responded, but just couldn't close that gap. So I honestly think Jantar Mantar could be the bet, especially at the price he is.
I love it. We'll have a lot more from Alex and the team. You can go on the website on Saturday afternoon if you're interested in playing. Obviously, some good winning tips on there. Anything else about this race or that you're looking forward to generally in the terms of the JRA stuff this weekend?
Sure, I can plug one more quick horse, actually. A little love for France here. We have a French bred named Shen Emperor. He's by Siuni out of a Galileo mare. He was purchased at the 2022 Arcana Deauville yearling sale for 2.1 million euros. And, you know, although the highest finishing foreign bred horse in this race was sixth by Asia Express in 2014 and also Darlington Hall, same placing sixth in 2020, he's run very well against this top competition. He was second to Regaleria in the Hopeful. He was then subsequently second in the Deep Impact Kenyan in March. That was a race that saw disappointing finishes from the top two betting choices, but he didn't disappoint, running a game second there. So he could be one at a price. He's currently, let me check on his odds for you. He's currently sitting at 9.6 to 1. I think that will float up a bit, especially as the hype around Regaleria continues and Justin Milano as well. So I would look for that to float up, especially in the US market.
Some terrific ideas there, Alex. We'll check in with you and the team on Saturday. Appreciate you coming in, especially from the road. Nice work getting yourself set up there in the hotel lobby. Much appreciated. And we'll talk again very soon. Definitely want to have you on again to talk either more JRA stuff or also do a little bit of a deeper dive maybe into the Japanese contingent. It does seem like it'll be a contingent, right? At least two runners coming for the Kentucky Derby.
That's what it's looking like, but right now I'm all Forever Young, so we'll see.
we'll get more on that as time goes by. Alex, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Pete. Have a great day.
America's Day at the Races returns this Saturday on Fox Sports to cover the Aqueduct Spring Meet. Tune in to watch 9 exhilarating races. Join JK, Maggie, Acacia, and the rest of the Fox team for live racing, expert analysis, expert picks, and more. And you can bet on the races using Naira Bets. New members receive up to a $200 deposit match, nonstop fun at the Aqueduct Spring Meet. For full schedule of America's Day at the Races, go to inthemoneypodcast.com/TV. Next up on the show, we bring in a man who's been doing a whole lot of recapping with us. But on this show, we're going to ask him to look forward. He writes about New York racing, basically every racing day, over at inthemoneypodcast.com. And that's what he's here to talk to us about today. We now bring in Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things?
Doing great, Pete. Good to be with you. Glad to be doing a little looking forward as opposed to looking back.
You a little under the weather or something? You said your voice doesn't have its usual strength today. You playing hurt or you all right?
I'm not going to lie to you. I got out of bed about 10 minutes ago, so I'm taking a few days off and doing that. But doing this because I'm dedicated to my craft.
I love that. And that's fine. You know, we've often said the fun part about these shows is just having conversations we'd have anyway. Sometimes you have those when you roll out of bed. So that's
absolutely.
I'd much prefer it be that answer than that you were fighting things off. Let's start off. I said we're going to look forward, but we're actually going to start off by looking back quickly to the Sam Houston Race Park contest last weekend. I know you had a hand in developing the format. Let's start with the results, but then we'll talk more generally about how you feel like the format worked out and all that good kind of stuff. What who got the win first and foremost?
Yeah, Craig Dixon finished first. He had a bankroll of a little over $11,000 when all was said and done. So it was a $2,000 bankroll entry fee where you had to bet $1,000 on Sam Houston and $1,000 on any combination of Aqueduct, Oakland, Santa Anita, and Keeneland. And Craig was able to get a relatively big lead late in the, well, about middle of the day on Saturday. And nobody moved terribly much late. There was a big cluster of people between about $5,000 and eight chasing him. And he ended up being able to hold everyone off. We situated it so that Sam Houston's 11th race would be the final race in the contest. And that got a little more difficult when Oakland got to 25 minutes behind schedule. But we were able to get it done. And Craig staved everyone off. He actually opted for an NHC spot. We were giving away one BCBC spot and two NHC spots. He opted for an NHC spot because he apparently is busy with something Breeders' Cup weekend and he cannot play remotely because he lives in Texas. So Steve Simonovich was the beneficiary of that, and he finished second and got a BCBC spot out of it. So he was very pleased with his trip down to Houston and doing so. It worked out well for him. The third place finisher was Elon Cuellar, who actually finished first in our January contest, but simply took the money as opposed to the NHC spot and ended up actually disqualifying himself. But he and his brother, Ivar, have done very well in some of our local contests over the years. So glad to see them participating again. And pretty fun time for everybody. We're already working on what we might do for next year and having a meeting about it actually on Thursday to kind of get a long range look at it. But I think you can continue to count on there being contests at Sam Houston, and everybody should make plans to join us in late January.
That would be great. And maybe it'll be, you think it might be similar late January and early April, or did the early April date end up being too close to the NHC, or, you know, looking back at it quickly, and I know no final decisions have been made, but what's your gut instinct about the timing of this most recent contest and how the format worked out?
I think given the strength of the January contest, I could see us just sticking to that. And I think that's probably the direction we would go. I think there could be a second contest. I think the format might be different. It could even be at a totally different time. It could also be a second one before NHC, but I think we might just, given the response that we had to the one in late January, I could see us putting all of our resources into that and trying to go from there. So that's the plan as of right now, but we'll certainly discuss it and hash it out a little bit more and see where we might be able to make some hay.
You had a lot of entries January. This one wasn't bad. I think you had something like 40 for this one, which I think, given the bankroll time of year, like not bad at all. But I get it, given the smashing success of the January one, and probably easier for me to come down and visit during the January one too. So I should be encouraging this line of behavior. What was it like in that last race at Sam Houston pool wise? Were people being aggressive and betting bankrolls, and could you see the effect of the contest on the tote pool with no simulcasting money down there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge, certainly, is that people are reticent to start to bet significant amounts of money into pools that aren't very large. We were about 100,000+ up for the day than we would normally be on a Saturday. We did have a couple more races, but I mean, to put it in perspective, our win place and show pools were probably, you know, a few thousand bigger than they would have been. Some of our exotics were definitely better. So we probably saw an overall bounce of 25% or so from that race itself, but it's definitely a big challenge with the pools the way they are. You know, that's why we wanted to give everybody an opportunity to bet some simulcast races as well. Yes. And so I think it worked out well in that respect. So this is a format that I grew pretty fond of because it's the one that Arlington Park used to use when they had their NHC qualifiers back for the last few years it was open. And it was the same thing. They would do it on Million Preview Day. You'd have to bet $1,000 on Arlington and $1,000 on any combination of a bunch of other simulcast races run during the contest period. And so I loved it. And it ends up being kind of a live slash simulcast contest. And I think, you know, as long as we're in this scenario where we can't take any kind of export, we'll probably be looking at something similar to this for a period of time where we can integrate as much of a simulcast setup as possible.
This is as good a time to ask as any, as we sort of wrap our coverage for the time being with Sam Houston. Any updates or guesses about the state of Texas racing? I mean, are we just in a holding pattern at this point?
Oh, it's not going anywhere. We're not. Nothing's going to be different for any time soon. What will end up happening is they will, I think once all of the appeals are exhausted with HISA and it becomes clear that HISA is going nowhere, the Racing Commission will have to acknowledge that that is the case. But honestly, Pete, I just my personal opinion, I think horsemen's groups are going to fight HISA for forever. I don't think they're going to stop. I don't. They're obviously on a mission, and you know, maybe it gets to a point where the Supremes say it needs to be rewritten with this part of it so that there's not an agency that, you know, that does this and that. But it's, I think that's what it'll take. And then at that point, the Texas Racing Commission would have to, at least the approach of the current executive director is that the Texas Racing Act is not situated to have to have any money that is being put in for testing or for any of those types of items. Any money that is being used for that cannot go to the federal government. It all has to be done in state. So they would have to rewrite the Texas Racing Act, which they're showing no alacrity in doing so right now. So I don't envision this stopping anytime soon. I think there's also some political machinations going on behind the scenes as well with some of the money that comes from the HIEA, which is the horse industry escrow account. That's what basically funds the majority of the purses in Texas for thoroughbreds and quarter horses. And so I think there's a little bit of, well, you know, you want to fight this, then you can count on that being gone kind of stuff. And again, that's just my opinion. I've not been privy to any of those conversations.
You'd think the squeeze would be such with the lack of money coming in that could be there that it would put more pressure on the local populace to make more, I hate to say it, but I'll show my hand here, make more forward-thinking decisions.
Well, the problem is that one of the things that has plagued racing over the years is that everybody looks at things through their lens and nobody looks at the big picture. So there's only one horseman that basically seems inclined to speak up about what's going on down here. And he has been drowned out by everybody at the Racing Commission a long time ago, because what the horsemen see is that the purse account's about the same. So they don't really care because they're making money. They've made money and, you know, they don't see a change to that happening fundamentally, especially as long as the HIEA money is there. And the tracks don't really want to fight what's going on with it because they don't want to upset what could be a long-term goal for them with regards to expanded gaming. So, you know, all three of the major racetracks in Texas are owned by casino companies, and, you know, they're in it for the long play, right? They see on their balance sheets and they see on their productivity reports what kind of action they get in casinos in major metropolitan areas. And their eyes light up when they think about Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, right? I mean, these are places with massive populations that are rapidly growing and gives them a real opportunity to have a lot of long-term success. But you're not going to do that at the expense of ruining yourself now when that's your long-term goal. And I don't believe I'm speaking out of turn. I suppose if I am, I'm going to find out in an unceremonious way. But I'll run that risk.
It sounds very logical, and what it is a perfect recipe for the holding pattern you predict. Okay, off from Texas racing, on to New York racing. We could have potentially, I guess, started thinking about turf about now, but the weather in New York, I guess, has had other ideas. So we're looking at an all dirt pick six here on Saturday. And where do we kick it off? We kick it off in race number four with this New York bred allowance race going a mile on the dirt. Nick, how do you want to light this candle?
So, you know, I think this is an opportunity for you to get a little bit of a price in a sequence that's otherwise going to be somewhat chalky. I like the maiden win last out for Flipstream. who got back to a dry track, stretched out to a mile, and improved immediately. And I think speed figure wise, he's really in line with the better runners in here. I also think there's kind of a funny distance issue with two of the favorites in that I think a mile is actually a little far for Safalow's Mission, and I think it's a little short for Jackson Heights. So he might be in exactly the right spot from a race flow perspective, in that he's going to be stationed outside of Friday I'm in Love and Horse Be With You, who should be battling early. I think that'll give him an opportunity to pounce when he's ready. So I wanted to try Flip's Dream and have a little backup on the 2 and 5, but mainly 6 for me.
I hear you. 6 with 2, 5 on the backup line. I was thinking pace wise that Flip's Dream might join the party a little early and set this up for a run from Safalow's Mission. You're making a good point about, you look at those late sectionals, from the last race, and doesn't necessarily seem like one that needs to go a mile, but maybe this hot trainer jockey combo can help get this one over that. I mean, I am getting nervous though now thinking about taking a 1 for 17 horse who might not be at the ideal distance, and definitely thinking with the right kind of ride, your Flipstream might be the right alternative. So I'm going to slide in the 6 as a backup to the 2 to kick things off in the pick 6 as we move to race number 5, where we've got $25,000 claimers going 6 furlongs on the dirt field of 7 that's heading postward in this spot. I thought it set up beautifully for number 5, 12th Man, taking a meaningful drop in class off the layoff and in a situation where I might normally, at an allowance level, I might be worried about 12th Man getting a little too far back. At this level, I think it's the type of situation where he might just be invited into the race. And another one, not exactly a win machine with the 21.264 line, but I just think the trip is going to be perfect for 12th Man, and that's the way that I went. How do you see it?
Yeah, this is going to be a tough race to figure out in terms of how it's going to unfold on paper, because one of the main speed horses is Morning Cup from the rail, and Eric Cancel isn't exactly Julio Pazua. So I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of pace on in here that might actually work in the favor of a horse like Bad Larry, who did have a wide trip last time out, wasn't really hurt by it. It wasn't a day where you needed to save ground or anything, but I could actually see him running better. And Lane Luzzi has actually done well riding in New York, being a little bit more aggressive. I agree with you about 12th Man. He seems like clearly the horse to beat. This is a big class drop, and he's coming out of nothing but allowance races running here, where he's undoubtedly facing weaker. Devil's Key feels like a horse who's on the upswing as well. His first off a claim effort was solid. Fits nicely here class-wise. So I didn't really have much of a definitive view of this race. I felt like there was even an argument to be made that if Blue Plate Special got out of the gate, he could make some late noise. And I always love taking Randy Persaud at a price. This isn't exactly going to be the kind of price that I'd like on a horse from Randy. But yeah, I've not completely finalized my order, but I do definitely know I want to use the 3, 5, and 6. And I'll probably end up using all of them as backups, including the 1, 2, 4, and 7, because I just have no real read for this race at all. And again, like you alluded to, I don't trust 12th Man given his issues with winning in the past.
Yeah, that's the one fear there, but I'm going to look past it, I think, in that spot and see if in a race where I think a lot of people will spread, maybe I can get skinny and pick something up. Let's go to race number 6, $40,000 claimers. I'm very boring in this one, so I'll just volunteer to go first. I mean, I know with the entry in there, maybe it's not going to work out this way, but I was thinking, in all likelihood, Dangerous Ride is going to be able to get loose or at least get a very good trip on or near the front in this spot, and had the kind of numbers where I was just comfortable going with the favorite in here with Dangerous Ride. Can you get a little bit more creative?
Not really. I think he's going to be pretty tough. I don't envision him having much of a problem getting close to the lead. This is kind of why I was willing to go so wide in that second leg, because I think this one is a bit of a skinny one. He fits very well on the outside. And I think other than like the maybe Lafitte's Fleet, who you could see improving first off the claim for Dutch Row, Gentleman Joe has some races that you could go back to, Mr. Bob with a little bit of upside second off the claim. But otherwise, I mean, he's a horse that kind of stands out, Drew ideally. So yeah, he was a lone A for me. I did want to use the 5 and 6 a little bit as backups, but I think it's clearly Dangerous Ride's race to lose.
Yeah, okay. We're on the same page there. We'll row in together as we move forward to race number 7, where we've got these New York bred maiden specials going 1 mile. How do you see this one?
This one I thought was probably a little bit a little bit on the more difficult side as far as the late three races go, because we're going to have a couple of solid favorites to close out the sequence. I mean, obviously the four Bob John Ray is going to be a major player, second time out, should improve. Blinkers on, it's been a good angle for Chad. Horse should get better with experience, so I'm envisioning he'll run well. The horse who actually finished ahead of him, Elfgar, is in there as well. His form has been a little bit more exposed since then, and he's not really impressed. So I think people are gonna probably go the other direction from him. I thought the nine Mellotron for Zilla Racing and Orlando Noda, who had a pretty sprightly work tap, was a horse that you at least needed to pay attention to. Progeny of Salamini have been pretty solid, so I wanted to use him as well. I also wanted to use the six Hagrid's Flame, who second time out can improve. And there was a long time where John Terranova was really solid with second time starters. So I was going to use 4, 6, and 9, back up a little bit with the 2 and 5, and just try and get through this one.
Okay, a little survive and advance action. That was 4, 6, and 9 on the top line and 2 and 5 on the back line. I was also a bit noncommittal in here. I do think that you might have identified the key piece of form with that February 25th maiden, though. Bob John Ray, the horse that ran third in there, being bet, not breaking. I mean, that's almost an automatic bet back for me. When they take money like that as an indication that they have more speed and then they don't break, they can just improve leaps and bounds. And then it also just feels like a horse that's supposed to, on pedigree, get better going from 6.5 to a mile. So, and then I will also, speaking of automatic type things I do in a situation like that, where you've got the horse that beat him coming back, and I can conjure enough excuses for Elfgar just in terms of, you know, maybe a bit of a fast pace in the next race and then stakes company the one after that. I was going to try to mess around and see if we could just get it 2 and 4, but I don't hate the idea. Actually, I'll call it 4 and 2, but I don't hate the idea of backing up deeper in that spot. There's a lot of horses that can win. I might just take a view that that's the form line you want and go from there. We've got $12,000 claimers in race number 8 and a big favorite that you alluded to already in the form of number 1, Colonel Vargo. Are you with or against? I'm having trouble conjuring too much of a case against.
Yeah, that's the problem, is like I can't find an alternative. I mean, he's beaten up on a number of these horses of late. The only horse that I could hear maybe a little bit of a case for would be the 4, because his form is from out of town and he's a little bit of a stranger at this point. Stranger. But I mean, otherwise, it just feels like Colonel Vargo at this stage is so much better than all of these horses. I can't envision him taking the step back that he would need to in order to be beaten by any of them. So, yeah, that was kind of where I landed.
Will you use the 4 motion to strike as a backup on some tickets?
Yeah, once as a backup, just for a little insanity insurance.
You know, obviously I have no problem just stone cold signaling a horse. But in a situation like this where there's some element that you don't fully trust, but I can't like make the intellectual case when that big favorite's in the race, I'll almost think about it like, well, thought experiment, what if this horse scratched? What would the race look like then? And then try to come up with, you know, something else to throw in there on one backup line. Airport as maybe a little bit of a speed play as a deep backup in there. I mean, it's a guess, but when you're in that situation where you don't really like anything else, sometimes another angle you can use is just who might be able to get loose. If I was to tell a story about anybody, you know, if Colonel Vargo doesn't break or something, maybe Airport has a chance. Just very deep backup, more of a C type for me, as we're both in agreement that Colonel Vargo is going to probably get the job done. Let's move on to this nightcap once again, and much more competitive in morning line terms, this ninth race, these maiden New York breds. How do you want to try to see this thing out?
Yeah, I mean, more competitive in terms of morning lines, but I think the 9 he has it all is very much the worst to be. Coming out of an open company maiden special, drawn well on the outside, should be very, very tough, and obviously the quality of the last running line goes up quite a bit when Society Man comes back to run second in the Wood Memorial. So yep. I thought he has it all would be really tough. I could see maybe using the 7 and 8 a little bit, but I kind of thought the 9 would be a pretty tough customer. I'd use the 5 as well, first time Dutro off the trainer switch.
All right, there you go. 5, 7, and 8 on the backup line. I was comfortable standing with the 9 in this spot off that drop in class, and hope that that David's right, and this horse might be a bettable favorite. What's your, not to pick on somebody else's morning line, that would be ironic, but what's your gut as to what price he has at all is going to go off?
Yeah, I'm sure 2-1, 5-2 ish. David's usually right. I get reminded of that on Twitter occasionally too. But that's, no issue. But yeah,
I'm sure David would be the first. He would probably be the first to point out that it's a little bit of a different assignment. I guess Saratoga is maybe comparable to Keeneland, right? With horses coming from everywhere. But this time of year at Aqueduct, a little bit more straightforward, I think it's fair to say.
Just a bit.
Well, I would bet this horse at 2-1 for sure. So I'm going to make He Has It All a confident A to close things out. Nick, really appreciate you coming on and giving your thoughts about what's going on in Texas racing, the contest scene at Sam Houston. We'll definitely let folks know when those announcements are made so they can start making travel plans early. And hopefully we'll have another deal with Sam Houston next year. And we can maybe even we flirted with trying to do some sort of in the money event down there this year. It didn't quite work out with the dates, etc. But that's definitely something I want to do. Very excited to get to Houston, if only to eat my way around the town, but also to check out Sam Houston. It's been great fun partnering with you and them this season, Nick. Another quick reminder that this is a great time of the year to sign up for In the Money Plus. You get extra coverage for every day at Keeneland, plus our entire Derby package for just 1 month, just $20. Keep in mind that contributors to the Derby package have won $4 million more than that over the last several years in the BCBC. This is a crew that knows what it's doing. Learn more at inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Want to thank all of today's guests. Want to thank you guys for tuning in and listening. Busy time of year around here. Might end up dividing these late week shows into two on occasion. If Santa Anita were running, that would have been too much for one show. But anyway, feel free to give me your feedback on how you like this content presented as well. I always thank the listeners for making these shows so much fun to do. And I mean it. If you have any questions, reach out inthemoneypodcast.com. The contact page goes right to my email. Thanks also to our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing, and the new partner, but Kim Weir being the founding partner, her new landing spot, Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. Learn more about what they've got going on over there through inthemoneypodcast.com/horses. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.